Welcome to Correctional Commentary, a podcast about the ins and outs of corrections, an uncensored view from behind the walls, hosted by Robbie and Caleb.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Correctional Commentary. On this episode, we have a very special guest, and as always, we have your host here, Caleb and Robbie. Here's our very special guest, Tim, a.k.a. Pops. Pops, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, everybody. I've been in corrections about 3 years, state facility. I pretty much enjoy what I'm doing. I guess we're ready to go after that.
So we're going to go ahead and, we'll jump right into it. We've got some questions here for you, and just answer with how you feel comfortable and to the best, your best ability. So question number one is, what made you decide on a career shift to corrections? Because you've not always been in corrections, right?
No, I was in truck driving for about 30 years. After a while, it just got too hard as far as the isolation and lonely time in it and everything else like that. And just wanted to do something different. And this is about as extreme different as it gets.
I agree to that, wouldn't you, Robbie?
Yeah, for sure. So is there anything that you know, led you to corrections over, you know, something else after you got out of, you know, truck driving?
Believe it or not, it was just a really odd set of circumstances where it just seemed to present itself to me, and it just seemed to come natural. Right after I was done, somebody made the comment that I should go put in an application, see how it works. And the more I thought about it, the stranger it got, because it started making sense. And it was one of those situations where as soon as I put some effort into it, everything just seemed to slide into place like it was meant to be.
Yeah. So whenever you, you sound like you're enjoying it. I mean, you know, really, you know, you have your rookie year, but really I would say probably your first 5 years is, you know, really your rookie Tom of where, you know, you're still learning. What would you say, like, as of right now, you know, what's your favorite thing about, you know, this profession that you went in as a correctional officer?
Well, strangely enough, it's the people that I work with. I really enjoy the shift I'm on, and the people that I'm around, the quality of people that I'm with. I've met more people here in the last few years than in probably a couple of decades truck driving, that kind of have the same ideals and mindsets that I have. The job itself has its ups and downs. Of course, there's good days and there's bad days, but that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, we all know that, you know, good coworkers can make or break a facility, make or break your morale. You know, if you don't have people you can trust or people that always want to start making drama, I mean, it leaks into everything.
Very good point. Yeah.
So you sound like, again, you're very knowledgeable. You've been around long enough to gain a little bit of more real world knowledge. All right. So my question is, if you could give advice to a rookie right now, what would it be?
Oh, definitely listen to your training. Definitely listen to, I mean, you'll get the feeling of who really has the real world sense to, I mean, you can read a manual all day long. You really literally have to jump in, get your feet wet, and start every day with the attitude that you're just going to do the best you can to get through it.
So you would definitely say that the best way to learn the corrections job itself is to, you're going to get the best education just doing it.
Definitely. Most definitely. You just have to be not afraid just to jump in and get it done.
I like that answer. I really do. Not being not afraid to try new things.
Yeah. So, you said that you've been, you know, you've been working this, you know, for 3 years. So, I mean, that's a pretty good time to, you know, really get a lay of the ground, a lay of how facilities operate. You know, like me personally, you know, I've worked at a lot of different facilities, and in your, you know, I would say short 3 year tenure at your facility, you know, what have you seen change the most? Like, what do you think most substantial change in that 3 years is?
The most that I could, the changes that would be affecting me would be, you get really tight with the people that you're around. And when there's a personnel change, that really makes a hole in the gap in the what's going on with your day. And every day is a little bit different, so you're outside of your comfort zone, really. The way I've been trained was, anytime you felt like you were getting comfortable with something, they would move you to a different position so that there would be more learning. And actually getting comfortable outside of your comfort zone. It's a little bit different every day. You're dealing with different people, temperaments, moods. Full moon is a real thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so you bring up the full moon, the superstitions, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of makes me want to lead you into the question of, what are some of the things that you would like the public to know about what we do for a living?
Oh, the stigma that TV and movies have put on what we do for a career didn't do anybody any favors. It couldn't be farther from the truth than TV drama. It's more, it's probably going to be an unpopular thing to say, but it's more like a adult daycare than anything, because we literally are protecting from all fronts. We're expected to protect society from the people that are, I mean, you're put in prison because you're considered not responsible in society. And then we have to actually protect the inmates from society. And on days where things are going wrong, we have to protect everybody from each other. And we have to watch our own backs.
Yeah, I mean, I completely understand that. Your experience from going into that, you know, if there was one thing you could change, there's one thing you could change, like, at your facility, and you think that it would, you know, make the utmost difference, what would that change be?
Wow, good one. That would be a toughie. Some of the, I don't know on what details I could again get into, but with the upper echelon, some policy changes have been made that make it harder to do our jobs. I'm not really sure how far I can go into that, but
I get where you're going with it. I mean, yeah. It kind of seems like people are put into position of power that hasn't been a correctional officer. And, you know, whenever you have somebody making policies that hasn't been a correctional officer in 20, 30, 40 years, mm-hmm. there's always going to be a disconnect.
Yeah. People in the office that never drove a truck, telling truck drivers how to drive, people in offices that have not had to actually deal one-on-one with the inmates. Yeah, big difference, definitely. A lot of people would probably only inside would understand, you know, tier control.
Oh, good God, yeah. Yeah.
Are you talking about like tier management?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Some of the changes that were made there made things difficult.
You know, and I know we don't want to spend too long on like stuff like that. For people that don't know, tier management, you know, like how you see in TV, like how you have like what two basically two two layers. You have, you know, a row of cells on the bottom and a row of cells right up top, up the stairs. You know, that's whenever you only let one, you know, either bottom or top out, and then they go up, and then the next one come out. And I know some facilities that I've worked at, they decided to change it and take everybody off tier management. And boy, it gets dangerous real quick whenever you have 120 plus inmates out with, and some facilities are so bad to where, you know, especially from what I've read and what I've witnessed, some facilities are so bad to where they have one officer running two pods. And whenever you get into stuff like that, I mean, that's whenever accidents happen.
Yeah, you explained it very well and perfectly. That's what I was trying to get at, but I didn't know how much or how close, how far to get into that. But
I can even say with that change, and I know we got to move on, but I want to say this really quick about the lack of tier management. I don't know about you, Tim, but I know because I was there still. I was still there when they changed the policy about tier management. I personally saw an increased number of incidences of violence.
Yes.
Because like Robbie said a few minutes ago, now you're dealing with 128 inmates versus just 64.
Well, yeah. I mean, and, you know, these unit managers, the unit managers and everybody that plays these inmates, you know, they're not stupid. Like, they know that if we have 50 Crips in, you know, one pod, you know, they're going to split them up between upper and lower. It looks like you have your co-host today.
Yeah.
Apologize for that.
Yeah. That's our sidekick / other co-host, Remington. He's a blockhead. So he has understanding of personal space.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's just, you know, that's just another prime example of they let the wrong people make the wrong calls.
Oh, I will second that notion. 1,000%.
Yeah, you mentioned gangs. Some of them have to respond to each other in a certain manner. So we have to be able to identify these people, know that they don't mix, know they have to be separated.
You got to mitigate that. You have to be the mitigators 100%.
Yeah. Whenever you eliminate tier management, that kind of just – that clashes.
So, okay, because you said that that's changed.
Yes.
So that's one of the. So, sticking with the idea of changes, what do you think the future of corrections is? Think more changes like this, or you think we might see a reversion back to more of a conservative style, early 19th century style of prisons?
With what experience I have, I think a more conservative, older school mentality needs to be brought back in. Newer is not always better. Sometimes tried and tested. If it works, don't fix it. But technology will be coming in. One of the new technologies that are coming in is the electronics, so they can eliminate mail. Because it has to be monitored too. That's going to be something that's you're going to have to deal with. There's no way around that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's only because we have to control the environment.
Yep. I agree
It's an unpopular notion, but we have to control the environment. In other words, it goes to chaos, and chaos never works.
How much of our job, though, is actually popular notion, though?
Good point.
Well, I mean, and kind of adding in to, you know, control. I mean, control is probably one of our biggest concerns and also biggest hurdles, you know, just for due to staffing. I mean, you know, you got facilities that are operating at, you know, like we went over with Georgia in our news, they're operating at like a 70% vacancy. And, you know, everybody has some like off the wall ideas, you know, what kind of ideas would you have to, you know, to help increase staffing?
Well, you guys made some really good points in your last broadcast on that.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the viewer. Everybody else, listeners, advise to watch the video.
The first response, like you said, was throw money at it. Yeah, money is an issue. Money always is an issue, only especially when you're trying to hold a house together, bills, everything else. But also retaining the people have is because just training and retraining is just throwing money in a pot.
It's like throwing money into a boat and hoping it.
Yeah. First day you buy it and the last day you buy it is the best days.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish I had an easy answer for that. That's something that's going to have to be to retain people that have to be able to enjoy their job and not be in too much fear of your job. So there you go back to the quality of people that you're working with. I've been around some really good people that I know for a fact that will have your back in bad situations or whatever.
And, so, you know, that's a I don't know which question you're about to ask, but I got a perfect one to kind of lead into that.
Yeah, I think you and I had the same idea. Go ahead and ask it there.
Yeah,
Ron.
So the same question. So with you saying, you know, the people you trust, you know, we've brought up in past podcasts about, you know, to be your brother's keeper. I don't know if that's what Kate was going for, but I beat you to it. What does that phrase mean to you? You know, to be your brother's keeper.
Oh yeah, your brother's keeper. You definitely have to. I have a boss of mine that I have a lot of respect for. He's got three rules. One, everybody goes home, and 10 fingers, 10 toes, and not leaking from anywhere. Rule number two, always have your head on a swivel, situational awareness. And when you work with other people that are like-minded, you pick that up right away. So if you're always seeing that somebody's watching, looking, when you turn and you see that somebody's already aware of you, when you're in the pod having to walk your rounds and stuff, knowing that, you know, I don't have to worry about it. Somebody already is watching where I'm not looking. Is
the big thing.
It's comforting.
Yeah, it's comforting. Yeah. Somebody that has had my life saved because of my backup. It means a lot. Now, I mean, definitely had this notion about it. You and I could have a personal issue, but if you hit that button or you call options assistance, whatever method your department used.
Oh yeah. Uses, good point.
I would come running. I would whip ass with you, save your ass, do what I need to do to make sure you're alive.
About that later. Yeah.
And then as soon as we were done, I checked on you. I'd say, you okay, fucker? Go fuck yourself. And I'd leave. That was at that point our beef would resume, but I wanted to make sure you stayed safe. Once that was verified and you were good, go fuck yourself. I don't care.
Kind of like those old cowboy movies where they team up on evil cars. No, I'm the one that's going to kill him, not you.
Exactly. It's the same mentality.
Yeah. also, a lot of respect for the female COs that are out there, too, because they're definitely in a
man's world. Let's be real. I mean, I'm not trying to be sexist or anything like that, but it's a male-dominated field.
And to maintain their professionalism in some very verbally rough situations and stuff. Yeah, definitely. Brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. I definitely know a handful that I would go into any situation with them because I know that they take themselves that seriously and they retain the training that they were given. Verbal judo.
Oh, that's a good point. We've not really discussed that this episode.
That's a really good one because the one person that I'm thinking of, I've actually had to pick some cues up from her. Verbal judo is a really good one because that's the psychological part of it. We have to be able to, like you said, maintain control without ego. And sometimes you have to parlay words I get away with more because of this. A lot of the inmates, you know, refer to me as old school.
For all of our listeners, he's referring to his beard, which is gray, which supposedly promotes wisdom. I don't believe it because I know the guy.
I can't say I've learned from doing everything right, but I do know 101 ways it didn't work.
Yeah. I mean, it's the verbal judo. I mean, you know, it's easy for somebody to go into a situation and gain control of that situation by force, but you know, it takes a truly skilled officer to be able to de-escalate a dangerous situation, you know, with your words and not with your fists. And me personally, I've learned that the hard way. I'm beaten down, broke up, back surgery.
No paperwork.
Yeah, no paperwork.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and you know, and with use of forces, always comes the possibility of, you know, of litigation.
Yep.
And that's, you know, that's something that, you know, none of us want for each other.
So Robbie made a good point about the tensions in the politics, a really special person. So that kind of leads me into my next question. Do you think the tensions might be caused by the bad food? Is it as bad as they say it is? Like that bridge there? That was a pretty smooth bridge, wasn't it?
I have worked in the kitchen, and the
smells are great.
Yeah.
A lot of perfume, that little mop scent.
Actually, there are some people that I'm very amazed that they do. When they do get out, they really should go to culinary school, because if you can make that quality food taste like food, then yeah, the food is, well, the prisoners are fed by a company that is the lowest bidder.
As most contractors are.
Yes. Take that information and run with it, and you're accurate.
So, because that sounds kind of memorable and everything.
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean for you to be a correctional officer? What does it mean to you?
Well, when I was truck driving, basically every day it was just get your job done, go from point A to point B, and rinse and repeat. Now when I go in, like you said, I deal with more people in a day. Matter of fact, let me back up just for a second. When I first came into training, I was with Caleb here, and I was stuck in a room.
I'm sorry.
Hey!
Nah. I was stuck in a room with more people than I usually would talk to in a year. I actually had to re-socialize myself, learn how to talk to people again.
Lucky bastard.
Yeah. Well, there's
quit bragging.
But the fact that I can actually make a difference sometimes, because every once in a while you can actually get through a thick skull and make some positive improvements. Encouraging, hey, you know, I want you to be able to get out. And if you get out, don't come back. Literally, change some of the people you hang out with, change what you do. You're going to have to, you know, hey, sorry, welcome to the adult world. You're going to have to get a job, where you rent and pay bills.
Yeah, I mean, and I want to touch on one other thing by, you know, how you, you know, like that's, to me, you know, that's a big prod thing of being, you know, correctional officers, be able to make a difference in somebody's life. If there was, you know, what kind of misconceptions do you think that the public has on, you know, on our about prison and, you know, just correctional officers in general?
Until I had this job, I never even thought about it. It was just part of the movies, whatever. This where it's the running around with nightsticks, like jackboots, and just, yeah. No, I'm sorry, but wow, thank you, movies, TV. That couldn't be more off. No, if anything,
do you wish it could be like that at times, though? I have to ask that, at least.
Well, here's the deal. Because
I know I did it several times. I wish I could just go around and start whacking people. more so my coworkers and the inmates, but I still wished I could do it.
It's almost a form of parenting sometimes. Yes, there is positive reinforcement. There's also has to be punishment. Yeah. There's certain behaviors that cannot be tolerated, and you're parenting. Like I've had two inmates that are supposed to clash when they're near each other. You literally have to just walk in and like, "May, okay, stop this, guys. This is not how we're going to conduct ourselves. Okay, really seriously, it's, come on, guys. We're all adults here. This is, I can't do this. Well, I can't do that. This is, well, then, guys, separate. It's that simple. If you can't look at each other, don't look at each other. At this point, why don't you go over here? You go over there, and we'll just coexist.
Have you ever had one of them a blindfold when they said, I can't look at that one? Walk away?
I told him to close his eyes.
Okay. Because I may or may not have done that. Allegedly, can't prove otherwise. Highly unprofessional for the listeners that have never been in corrections if you tell an inmate here's Michael for other reasons. But anyway.
Go lay down.
Yes, that's the perfect one. Yep, go lay down.
Yep.
Go take a nap. Because for our audience out there, it is really, add on to what Tim said, a lot of times it is like talking to a very, very big and mean toddler.
Yeah.
Point. Yeah.
Imagine if there was toddlers that were serial killers.
Well, and circle back around to where you said like the old school, and that's why, I get where you were going with about the, try new things and if it works, yeah. But you can tell what inmates were in. I mean, and they don't even like being called inmates. You can tell a convict that's been in prison for, or even a convict that has been out of prison for 10, 15 years, and they end up,
being institutionalized.
Yeah, and they come back. I mean, we deal with a new breed of inmates, especially with these young kids, these young thugs, where they idolize people and they idolize that lifestyle of being a gang member.
And then you get,
and yeah, I mean, and we gotta find somewhere, some way, to reduce, mm-hmm. Reduce the recidivism that, people come in and.
Yeah, I agree.
That's why, I don't really think it's a good idea to move in a direction of punishment because it's not working. Yeah. If it was working, if that worked, we wouldn't have a job.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you look at the
crime control methodology or theory coming out in the world of corrections.
Well, I'll give you a perfect example. If you pull up a prison cell in Switzerland, I don't know if anybody's ever pulled one up. Look at the difference between prisons in Switzerland compared to the U.S.
It's like a dorm room.
I mean, they have flat screen TVs on the wall. I mean, their doors aren't locked. It's almost like they're trying to rehabilitate them. Kind of like about an addict going into rehab.
That, Robbie, you talk about that, and one thing that, side note, like weird law in relation to that, I believe it's like in Sweden, it's in one of the Scandinavian countries. Do you know that it is not illegal for an inmate to escape a facility? Because they believe that it is not human nature to want to be caged.
No.
I couldn't believe that when I read it, but that's a different episode if we ever go international. So
yeah, for sure. But I mean, that just kind of goes to, the different standpoints that people have, and obviously what we're doing is not working, and that's the whole point of what we're doing is to bring, bring stuff to light that needs to be brought to light. And hopefully, my goal for this is for that one person to catch the ear of somebody that can actually change something. And, we're not getting on here to gripe and moan and, because we hate our jobs. I mean, I've worked in this career field for, 10 plus years, And, you know, it's
there was days that I hated, but I didn't hate the entire career. I loved the job.
Yeah, I mean, you love the job, and you hate, you know, you hate certain moments. Mm-hmm. But the
job doesn't at the end, like
yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we're there to make a difference. And, you know, out of everybody, one thing that makes me mad, and I would love your opinion on it, how the outside perceive correctional officers, kind of going back to the, you know, on TV, you know, why do you feel like the public doesn't view correctional officers as first responders or even law enforcement?
I've got a good one for that one. Oh yeah.
Well, that's a great question, Robbie.
Because you probably have a little more unique view because you were in truck driving for so long and you haven't been over here, you know, in corrections for as long.
Yeah. I've gotten a phrase from somebody, welcome to prison. Welcome to the truck stop on a Friday night. It's pretty rough.
Hookers all the same though, too, isn't it?
No comment. the perception of what the public think we are, mm-hmm. we're not part of the punishment program. That got done in court. We're not. On a few occasions, I've had to tell people, excuse me, I'm not that guy. No, I'm not the one to put little Johnny in jail. The court and the judge or a jury did this. I had nothing to do with that process. Mm-hmm. The process I have now is to make sure that he goes through that process as easily and as safely as possible.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that.
And it's happened twice so far. I've been stopped in public and how dare you put Johnny in jail. No, ma'am, I didn't. I don't know.
I put him in the hole though.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that'd be about like saying the cop put him in jail. No, his actions put him in jail.
Exactly.
What you talking about? It's all the police's fault.
But I mean,
who did this to you? You know.
Yeah, I mean I don't know about everyone else, but it frustrates me whenever someone will sit there and, you know, tell you that, you know, you're not a first responder.
Oh yeah,
we respond to more medical emergencies and more, you know, altercations of stuff than any, I mean, in my opinion, any nurse, any police officer on the street would. I mean, our everyday lives are dealing with drug overdoses, dealing with fights, dealing with just violence.
We got that little red button on the top of the red, and when we push it, all we hope for is, please, everyone, come quickly.
So, in the further that question for the group, show of hands, how many of us have dealt with a drug overdose? And for the listeners out there, all three of us raised our hands, and between all three of us right now on this podcast, we've got about 17, 18 years worth of experience, of corrections experience.
Yeah. I would even like to add to that, yeah. You know, out of the three of us sitting here, I mean, probably more me and Caleb, you know, how many of us have done CPR on an inmate? Perfect example, you know, Tim here, you know, 3 years in, he's already done CPR on an inmate.
Yeah, that's
and great. I mean, and I've done CPR on a inmate that, you know is deceased, but we can't stop
because we don't have that authority to make that call to whether the inmate.
Yeah, I mean,
that's a doctor's call
or having to help the nurse because she just not physically got the mass to take these 600-pound guys convulsing on the floor, and they have to be put over on their left side that, you know, so that what's aspirated.
Yeah.
So, you know, literally your hands on, no. you're, you know, they're choking. You've got to get the airway open. We're fighting to keep you alive. So hopefully later you make better decisions. I mean, yeah.
Which is fundamentally the definition of first responder.
Yeah, because we are the first ones to respond. Look at the word itself and define it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, whenever an inmate overdoses, I don't see police officers coming from off the street to respond, just like I don't see EMTs and everything
else.
Can
I say something?
It's uncensored, buddy. Go ahead.
It's a little petty. It's all guts, no guns.
Damn straight.
Yeah. That's an inside joke there, but yeah.
Robbie, I do want to ask one other question. It's going to be my last question. I don't know if Robbie has any more for you, Tim. Right. But my last question is, what has been your most memorable moment as a correctional officer? Good, bad, ugly, whatever. That one memory that sticks out to you, do you feel comfortable sharing?
Actually, it's a good one. There's somebody that I kept having to – had to keep coming back to the pod that I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
And I would kept telling them, you know, obviously this is not working for you. Obviously, you know, you got to come up with a different plan. And then to actually see this person now, he's cleaned up. He's making plans for the future. He actually wants out to stay out, understands that, you know, I truly do believe that when he gets out, I'm not going to see him again.
Good.
And that doesn't sound friendly, but it is friendly. Get out, stay out, come back.
That is one thing about to all of our audience that's completely respectful. We tell you, we don't want to see you again. That respectful in the prison, disrespectful just talking to other people on the street.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but to actually see somebody just go from, you know, I'm just living each day just to get high, to, you know what, I want to get out. I want to have a life. And I was like, hey, you know what it's like to walk up to a door and you don't need somebody else to open it for you? Try that. You're going to find out you like that a lot. Hey, how about going outside when you feel like it? You know, these are simple things, but they're not at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Robbie, I mean, questions?
I don't really have any questions as far as, but I mean, I would like to give, you know, Tim a chance, you know, if there's any last things that you would like the public to know, you know, about what we do and, you know, just to maybe change the misconception of, you know, somebody, especially with you coming from a career outside of corrections.
Again, that's a toughie. Thank you.
And we're pretty much gonna end with that. I mean, if you don't have anything, you know, that's fine. But that's something that I always try to. It's what I want to always end on, is that's trying to bring things to light.
Misconceptions and everything about how we are. How about some education on that?
Yeah, that's what we're here for.
A little more out in the public. You know, make our job not mysterious.
One thing we hope to accomplish with this podcast. That's the reason we're happy to have you on, because you can help us accomplish that mission.
And anybody that thinks they can do this better, come join us. Show us.
Yeah.
Be a part of it.
Well, guys, I think this about wraps up our video. I do want to say thank you to Tim, aka Pops, for being on the show with us. We're very grateful. We'll have to have you on again someday.
I'd enjoy it.
Sir, good luck. Stay safe. Watch your six. And as always, good luck. 100%.
Thank you,
Joe. Until next time, guys.
See y'all.